What's up, everyone? It's Gavin or Tweak.
Yo, what's good? It's Marcus or Pink.
What up? What up? It's Charles or Chuck.
What's good, everyone? You got Matt or Haz bringing the heat this week. Another Tweak Talks episode. We're all very excited to be here. What's going on, everyone? Do a little quick around the horn. Chucky, what's going on, man? It's always good to see you. You're too tan these days, bro. Working
I'm
too
trying.
hard.
I'm trying. I'm trying. Yeah, a lot of workout in the sun, but everything's been going good with work, which is amazing. And yeah, everything's progressing a lot faster than I thought it would. So super happy about that. Excited for the throne. And how are you doing, Pink?
Was good, bro. I'm always ready now because I'm only can be I feel like I only can be second or third, or I meant first or second, so I'm already locked in. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Nothing crazy happened this week, so that's pretty exciting. Just chilling. I'm a little tired, but I mean that's life, you know. Got work. So what's going on, Has?
What's up? What's up? We got a lot. We are in full swing, by the way. The Throne 2 coming up pretty soon here to a venue near you if you live in NorCal. I don't know why I said it that way. But we'll be back at the Guildhouse this year. We did a roundtable last week, which went really, really well. We're really excited to
Yes.
share all the new stuff that we're doing, all the new shit we're trying with the Throne. And I know it's getting close to game time because we're really planning and really working on a lot of stuff. So thanks everyone who joined the roundtable, especially Gavin being there, having you on Phil's channel was a treat, obviously. And everything else is good, man. Playoff baseball starts soon, so I'm chilling for that. I got Wavelength coming up in my backyard soon in October. Wow, holy shit. I can't believe where we are in the year. It's already early September, almost mid-September. So Wavelength is coming up October 5th, and that's in New England, in Westford, Massachusetts. So check them out. Registration closed soon. And they're a regional event that wants to do really well, and they're flying out a bunch of top players. So I want to see them do well, and I think they're doing some good work. So if you guys want to go, please register soon because that helps events out. Y'all smashers take way too long for registers for shit anyway. You only do it after the price triples. I don't know why that's worth it to you, but figure your shit out earlier would be my recommendation. Anyway, Gavin, what's up?
What's up? I'm exhausted. I just got back from Riptide. I don't know how all these youngins do it with going to tournaments every single weekend, but I'm trying to keep up. Two nights in a row is really stinging, but we go again, I guess. I have the Luminosity Invitational coming up. Also, for anyone who's interested, I have been occasionally recording some VOD review from tournament sets, especially losses. So if anyone's interested in that, a lot of you already support the Patreon and we appreciate that. But we do some bonus content alongside the VOD review I just mentioned. But yeah, thanks so much for supporting the Patreon. We can get into the general episode.
Wait, but there's more. Aren't we
Oh,
recording
true.
some Patreon topic, Haz? Why don't you tell
Oh,
them what it is, man?
we got a great Patreon. Marcus was already getting fired up before the episode. That's how I know it's a good Patreon topic. So, with the Throne coming up and the LG Invitational and a lot of Invitational and Summit style events, everyone thinks they know. This is the lineup. This is who we should invite. No question, hands down, biggest banger tournament of all time. We're gonna settle here on Tweak Talks. We're all gonna create the Charles Invitational, which sounds elegant, to be honest with you. That sounds great. The Pink Fresh Invitational, the Tweak Invitational, and the Hazmat Invitational. We're going to tell you who we would invite for the Invitational. Not only that, we'll tell you what the bracket format would be, side events. We're going to sell you on who's got the best event and who knows what the hell they're doing. Go to tweaktalks.com/Patreon to sub and see what we're up to.
You
I did
sold that
it.
pretty well, I'm not gonna lie.
It was
Help
nice.
up, help up.
Really? All right. Take my notes from Phil, man. Man knows how
That
to turn it on. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, let's talk about. You want to talk Riptide just a little bit? There's some results. There's maybe a little bet I'd like to collect on just a little bit. My man Shuton, can we just for a second? I was
Yeah.
so. It was a 3-1 too, was it not? Pretty sure it was
The
the first one.
first set and then second set was a 3-2.
3-2,
Do
yeah.
I was
That second
almost
set
made. The
was
second set was crazy.
crazy.
I thought we were talking about. I thought he was talking about Shuton Zomba though.
I was.
Yeah. Oh, my
Oh,
bad.
I thought you
I
were
was the
talking about
bet.
I
Shuton
forgot that one. I was
Zomba,
like,
I'm not gonna lie. That was really rough.
for Zomba, for me and Shuton, it was great.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Especially for you, yeah.
YouTube, let us know. What does Gavin owe me for losing that bet? He bet on Zamba. I bet on Shutom. He took the numbers. I took the heart and the soul. Tell me what I win in this bet. I have an idea, but I'm not going to say it until I'm going to let chat fill in. And not only that, I forgot. I have to ask chat. I got to ask you for one more thing. We're going to start bringing guests back on. It's been highly requested. Whenever we see people at tournaments or YouTube comments and all that stuff, people want guests. We get it. It keeps things fresh. Keeps it good. So let us know who you want to see for the next guest. We're like, who's our next guest? Is it Coney or is it Mars? It seems to be our guest list is pretty exclusive. We need to expand it here. So if you guys could let us know, that would be great. We have some ideas, but I feel like it's just been a little while since we've had a guest, and we always have a fun time with it. So anywho.
Void and Larry are also frequent guests as well. Like we have, yes, Larry, we do have frequent guests. Yes.
Larry rules. Hopefully his facial hair is growing back. We got so Shutan, not just the W over Zamba, helping me out. Oh, you know another prediction I had that went great? Riddles, baby.
Riddles, yeah.
I told you. Anyway, game five against Sonics. What the fuck? Huh?
Was it twice? It was twice.
Twice. Yeah. Yes.
Well, what's
I
up
feel
with
like
that?
when Terry specifically gets a lead against Sonic, Sonic has to approach the Terry bubble of him just doing Nair, F tilt, forward air over and over again. And it could be kind of tough because I was saying like there Sonic doesn't have a projectile. Like he is the projectile. So if like he doesn't time himself properly, then he's just gonna get hit by that Nair and take 2 million. I mean that move is absolutely ridiculous. It just lingers for 20 years. It feels like it combos into anything. It's pretty incredible. And then you always have the like surprise factor of go meter. Riddles was doing a lot of just raw power geyser. Like you'd be like, I think they're gonna jump. I'm sending
the whole
it.
Bracket.
Yep, the whole dude, bracket. Was, I think they're gonna dash in. I'm sending it. Like
he was spamming super moves like a silver fucking ranked Street Fighter 6 player. Like he was just mashing supers on Wake Up Anywhere, dude.
He learned something. Like,
whatever, it's all good. The thing I was gonna Power Wave 2 is great in that matchup because it's just a grounded projectile that can clank with Sonic early enough in the spin animation, which is it's so helpful. It helps so much to be able to put some sort of pressure on him from that far away. So he plays the matchup really well, but it still kind of looks like dog shit, honestly. So pretty impressive from Riddles as usual.
He got the occasional 10% from the Power Waves, I noticed. Yep.
There is one game where he actually got a stock from the power wave where he got the power wave and he kept running and then followed like the panic. I mean, it wasn't, I can't remember if it was a confirm off power wave or if it was just a scramble after power wave. I doubt there's a confirm off power wave, but yeah, I mean, to me, it felt like it was just very impressive. Like I said, that matchup is not great at all. And the fact that he's able to play that well versus Sonic specifically in that matchup is so impressive. And honestly, the way he just plays against Sonic the character in general, I mean, I think a lot of players can watch that set and take notes because if Riddles is able to take Sonic this close with Terry, like, come on now. You know what I mean? I just feel like just the way he positions himself for Sonic, because I think the community in general is getting better at fighting against Sonic because the main area you don't want to be against Sonic is right above the spin or like around roll distance, but it's more so you want a position to catch the spin. Eventually he will spin at you, right? And then you position yourself with a hitbox. I think that's why Korin is very good. And Riddles is making it work with his Nair. This was really funny. I think the commentators thought that Sonic Swan Down. You just gotta look at the bottom. Pro tip for any caster, you see a game and you're not sure, look at the bottom. Whoever's got percentage, whoever's got numbers by their name, they got it. But yeah, I think Riddles plays that matchup so well. And I think a lot of players are beginning to play the Sonic matchup a lot better. Obviously, this character is still omega oppressive offstage. There's not much you can do about it. But Riddles' recoveries were really solid, and he was able to get back to the stage most of the time. I think the main concern is just the amount of damage he was taking offstage. And even if he was able to get back on, he's just taking so much damage that part's a little rough. But once he gets go meter and gets back on stage, that's where the win cons felt like it was starting to come through, because then his own damage output, like even just like the simple forward tilt into the Buster Wolf confirm for damage is quite a bit, right? And then obviously having Power Geyser as an anti-air, there were so many times where yes, I feel like Riddles was doing the supers a lot, but a lot of power geysers had a lot of thought to it where it's like, okay, you have no resources. Definitely. And realistically you can only go here or regrab the ledge or some kind of positioning thing. And then just a very well-placed power geyser. Another thing that I noticed that he was doing a lot more as well was just bursting in with the side B, not the crack shoot, but the power fist. What is it called? Burning knuckle. There we go. Burning knuckle. Yeah. So he would burst in with burning knuckle a lot, would get stocks for catching people dashing back against the burning knuckle or just, you know, get damage in stage positioning. It is a little risky. It's like going for something like a dash attack, but it felt like a really good mix of staying center stage and positioning Nair to beat out the spin approach or coming in with burst options like that with the burning knuckle and stuff like that. So really enjoyed watching Riddles play this weekend.
Me too. In general, I really enjoy it. My fighting game guys this weekend, golly. Some great head-to-heads too. Ashimo Riddles.
That was great.
Pure cinema. Ashimo. Aiken. Cinema, bro. It was a cinema all. Dude, it was so good. Two game fives. They were, dude, someone in Twitch chat just wrote, they're just taking turns beating the fuck out of each other. the riddles Ashimo said. I was like, that is so true. And I loved it, dude. It was so good. It was so fun to watch for me personally. Jazzo also had a good tournament, making top 24. So I was happy with that. And then he went from Ken playing as Ken against Mia to playing as Sonic against Mia. I was like, oh, no. Game. He did take a game, though.
Game with the which Sonic.
Is fine with crazy. Sonic.
I know he's been putting Sonic, a lot of work in. Yeah, I know he's been putting a lot of work into the character, but I'm like, golly, is the matchup that bad? Is Jazzo that good? What's going on? Is it both? Like, I just...
I think, you know, it's crazy. Think of the play style difference too. Like Ken was just like trying to match your face all. Like Jazzo's pretty campy as far as Ken's go though, but like
that's true.
Still the character difference is like I don't know, they're so opposite.
It's funny to me because Jazzo is down to play Ken versus Sonic, but Game & Watch Ken, hold up, I'm bringing out the Sonic. That's wild to me, but I mean,
that's a good point. I haven't thought of it that way.
I don't know which is worse.
Like, why now of all times, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he went Ken. It was like a Pokemon evolution. Like, he went Ken, then Ryu, then Sonic. You know what I mean? Like, it was just progressed in the stages as to what he wanted to do in the matchup. Like, Ken Game & Watch, dog shit. Ryu Game & Watch, less dog shit, but dog shit. And then Sonic Game & Watch, hold up now. Cooking. So, that's good for Jazzo, man. I'm going to pretend I didn't see the Sonic pick, but I'm happy for him otherwise. He had a good set against Quid, too. I thought that was a fun set to watch. Good to see Quid do pretty well, too. Just falling shy of top 24. Gavin, you had a good prediction, too, Gavin. You said you thought your region would do well. Tri-State / New Jersey, a lot in top 24. Pharaoh was in there.
Yeah.
Pharaoh, Zomba.
Jackal didn't even show up.
I was thinking, it's funny because I thought of you when he dropped out. I was like, oh, damn, there goes Gavin's prediction. But Guy, I don't think everyone knows.
Oh, he's
New Jersey, right?
Guy was locked in.
Guy was locked in. Up to Guy, dude. I thought Guy had it.
I don't think he's New Jersey, actually.
Is he not? My fault. New York? Oh, New York. My bad. Yeah. Tri-State, nonetheless. Yeah, that can't we count it. So, what do you have to say for that? Your region, New Jersey, New York, beast mode region. Who would have thought yet again?
Beast in mode, Smash. Paul, my bad.
Wait, what? No,
you said Beast Mode region. I was like,
Beast Mode Paul's from Florida.
I very much enjoyed Beast Mode Paul, by the way. But yeah, I mean, my like growing up, my region was the greatest region ever, and it's slowly just becoming that again. But yeah, there's something in the water here or something, because we're all really good at Smash. Zomba is super consistent. Like, that's the obvious one. Like, that one is, like, not even really relevant to, like, the region thing. But Syrup is a household name now. Like, those two have beaten me a bunch of time. Jackal didn't even show up. But, you know, you have, like, Pharaoh and Guy, like, just talking into top 24. I was in top 24 as well. And it was just obviously by far the most... of like a region in top 24, I would assume. I'm proud of them. A lot of them are young, and I expect them to continue to do well in Ultimate. And I also expect them to have a really good start with the next Smash game whenever that happens as well. That's just something I think about now that I've gone through the motions of a couple different games. Someone like Zombo or Syrup, like I really expect them to be dominant like pretty early on with a game like you know, a new Smash game. But Pharaoh and Gaigai are obviously right there too. And they've been traveling and getting better for a while now, but it's definitely really nice to see, especially because me and Pharaoh had a small chat about the region in general before it all got really crazy. And it just, you know, our conversation kind of just brought like the top 24 just kind of made it obvious how we were just talking about how well the region had been doing lately. So,
dude, Pharaoh game five against, there were so many close calls in region too. Like, I think Gaigai was up 2-0 on Zomba, which, you know, obviously is an in region knockout anyway. But Pharaoh was game five against Riddles. Like, it was just crazy. And I think Syrup beating Mia is just, that is so impressive to
me. He looked comfortable the whole set. He dropped.
Insane.
He dropped the game and everything, but it just didn't look like Syrup got phased a single time in the set.
I agree 100%, which is insane.
Even in my set with Syrup, all the games were close, but it just felt like he was comfortable the whole bracket. You know what I mean? That's something about Zomba too. Like, there's nothing you can do to phase that kid. Like, those are the two people I lost to. It's just, they're just so comfortable. Or at least that's what it looks like from my perception. I don't know.
That's someone actually made a tweet about this, but his set against Riddles, when Riddles had that huge comeback in game one, remember? Yeah, and Zomba just like, he took a second and he's like, all right, let's lock in, let's play again. Like, that's it. I don't know how. I'm sure internally it's very different, but having that control physically to just like, I think he had his hand on his face and he was like, and then he's like, all right, let's play again. Like, let's keep going. I don't know how you do it. And then took a game off Riddles too after that happened. He absolutely stole that game though. Riddles was like, he was so clutch this weekend. He was just so clutch, which I think with Kazuya and Terry, you know, given their DLC mechanics that they have, it's to be clutch with those characters is just, man. I mean, I don't even have to talk about the Beast Mode Paul one that he did too. Just straight up cheated through everything, dude. I was like,
oh, the magic curse. We got to talk about that.
People, I was like, no one's been mad at Kazuya in a while. What's that? Like,
if I saw that like sequence, like, 7 years ago or something, I'd be like, both of those characters are just cheating. Like, first off, this character is just spawning like a stage-sized explosion.
That's an item. Smart bomb.
Yes. Like, first off, that's a final smash. Second off, that was an invincible final smash. Like, dude, what the heck is Smash, bro? Holy.
Yeah.
But yeah. Beast Mode Paul was vibing versus Shattuck. That's the set that comes to mind.
That was a sick set.
Yeah.
Wait, so I actually want to know, I wonder if Beast Mode Paul made an input error, because I'm just curious, and if anyone watching knows, put in the comments below, but if Beast Mode Paul had more mana, I wonder if Magic Burst has more knockback in the beginning, if there's more mana, or if Beast Mode Paul just misclicked Magic Burst. I'm so curious, because Riddles definitely seemed to know that Magic Burst does not affect Kazuya, at least the beginning part. So just went straight into electric. So I'm wondering if that was an input error, or maybe just like, I'm wondering if it's more mismanaging the MP and just being, oh, you needed more MP to have more knockback to knock him out of the tough guy or whatnot.
I don't think the multi hits would have been
enough regardless of the mod. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Beast Mode Paul input
pretty low
error.
Damage.
Or maybe Beast Mode Paul didn't even know that. I don't know.
I don't think the multi hits changed at all.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's probably
maybe,
just the final hit.
I mean, it could have been a few things. He also could have thought he like would catch him right before he hit the ground, in which case
I think Riddles was buffering that regardless.
I think Riddles buffered that for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. I think
it sounds like a Kazuya tactic, yeah. Just like I'm landing and I'm buffering.
Hey, it worked. Hold on.
It did
Riddles
work?
Is like,
yes, it did.
You know what?
It did.
Riddles is like, you know what? No one's complained about Kazuya in a while. It's time to bring out to dust off this old trick. Hold on.
I mean, he barely even played Kazuya that event.
Yeah, it was mainly
Terry. Mostly Terry. What were you saying, Gav?
I think Beast Mode Paul just thought he was checkmating Riddles, which makes sense with the positioning in the Magic Burst, and Riddles was doing it because he had no choice. You know what I mean?
You're muted, Charles.
Muted, Chuck.
Charles, you're muted.
Oh, I'm muted?
There you go. There you go. Oh.
Not anymore.
Oh, but yeah, I think Beast Mode Paul might have thought that, hey, this Magic Burst is going to connect before he hits the ground.
Yeah,
maybe that was the thought process. Because, yeah, I think that's probably the most the thing that makes the most sense, because you don't have tough guy in the air, right? So
right.
God, that'd be messed up.
Some other sets that come to mind.
Let's talk about the Shattuck Beast Mode Paul.
Jump in. You want to talk about. Dive in, Gavin.
Because what did you like about that set, Gavin? Huh?
You go for a second. Sorry.
Oh, okay. So
good.
Honestly, Beast Mode Paul in general, you know what was my favorite spell he used this entire weekend? Bro, what? It was the Flame Slash. Bro, brought out Ledge? The sword. Well, you just shield broke so many people with Flame Slash. It was crazy. He would just get the oomph for the psych up and just be like, cha, and you're just done. And it has so much crazy range too. So I had no idea that move could shield break shields that with that much health. So it was really exciting to watch.
I was watching some of Beast Mode Paul's matches, especially the Shattuck one with Aaron, who is very knowledgeable of Beast Mode Paul and very knowledgeable of Hero. So yeah, that was really cool, but I agree. Flame Slash has actually always been my favorite hero move, regardless of like what happened at this tournament. So that move is just cool. At two frames, like with the psych up, it breaks your shield. It's huge. It's fast. Like that move is just raw. But yeah, also I know it didn't hit there, but once again, I want to say to the world, Torrens confirms into backer at the corner are 3 million times better than Wolf's Fair Bear.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I just want to repeat that to the world one more time. I don't know if I've said it on this show, but I think it's so much better than Wolf's Fair Bear that they're not even in the same universe.
Not even right. close.
Next.
Dude, Wolf Fair Bear, you need to be like hard drifting in. You have to do the fair really low. It's so much so much more situational, where Corrin's like, oh, I nair drifting away. Let me just back air you.
They can Corrin can do fair bear or nair bear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take your pick.
Yeah, they can do first the nair.
It could be multiple versions of the nair. Like they don't have to be. They can do it while being safer on shield.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, bro. And the bear is obviously 3 gajillion times larger than Wolf.
Dude, Shattuck is insanely consistent. Like,
yes.
I was pretty sure he's going to make top 8, but what's up?
I counted in this Beast Mode Paul set.
Counted
what? How many times Shattuck grabbed Beast Mode Paul?
Oh, I was talking to you about that. Was it zero?
I counted. It was 2 times in this game, game 3 specifically. That's it. 2 times.
Yep.
Only in game 3.
So, something I
only
noticed
in one of the games.
About Shattuck, which is really interesting, is he doesn't really grab. Sometimes he'll grab on ledge traps.
Yeah.
But for the most part, and sometimes he'll do like a tomahawk grab, usually with his back facing you. But he doesn't grab. So if like someone's at like 150, 160, a lot of times they can be content holding a shield because he's trying to scare you and like it feels like he's like using the threat of the grab, but he just won't grab.
It kind of reminds me of Spargo, like mixing up the fast fall aerials with like the rising aerials. Mm-hmm. So, like the grab doesn't like come up as much. Like Shattuck's mostly looking for that, right? Like he'll get an aerial out really low to the ground when you don't expect one, or he'll do one trying to catch you getting out of shield.
Yeah.
Which is a common strategy with these types of characters, I think. And they obviously do it really well, those two. But yeah, I just counted and it was only in one of the games and it was twice total.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I think in the context of the matchup, I get it. Like with Hero, like he's always in menu. You'd rather put him into shield than run up and grab him out of it. Blah, blah, blah. But Shattuck was shielding a bit more than Paul, which I find a little strange.
Dude.
I don't know.
Beast Mode Paul is like great at 99% of the game. It makes sense, but he is awful at getting off the ledge. Like, it's normally neutral get up, roll, or jump side B. And I was like, dude, what's going on here? But then I thought about it and I was like, oh, he usually just zooms. So it's like, it's probably his weakest area because he's not in the situation as much. And he also has accelerate, so sometimes he just jumps past the ledge. You know what I mean? So I was like, dude, what's going on here? Like, he's getting cooked on the ledge by these, like, super top players. But then I was like, oh, you know what? Thinking about it, like, if you're on the ledge like six times a game, like that neutral get up roll jump side B. Hold on, that's mix,
bro. It just for like Hero's progression as a character really reminds me of like how much Olimar has progressed over the years. With Olimar, it's a little different because in Brawl, Olimar genuinely was a lot of RNG because of Pikmin Pluck. But when you're playing against all, like when I was younger playing against Olimar, it felt so chaotic and so random and so stupid. But now I like have an appreciation for someone really playing Olimar well, like really going through the motions. Like the flow chart is very nice. Like they're managing everything. Like it's cool. I like it. And then with Hero, it's like the same thing. Like the whole like Hero so random and chaotic thing. It's gone down a significant margin to the point where I'm not thinking about it as much when I watch. And that, I think that's really cool. Like a good Hero player, really, they get rid of all the things they don't want to see again. They always find what they need at the right time. Like it feels very like it's like methodical in its own way. Like when you watch Beast Mode Paul playing a set and he's like doing really well, especially like it doesn't look like a character that is like random or chaotic. It's really, really cool to me, like how like he doesn't feel as different from the rest of the cast anymore. Like when that occasional thing happens, like the shield breaks and the crits and like the wax and thwacks, like that's obviously like silly, but a lot of the time it's generally just it kind of reminds me like of what when I compared it to like Olimar, like in a way of like they've really gotten their character down to a T, and it just looks very methodical at this point. Like it looks very deliberate all the time. I just find that cool, because when the character was first released, like the community didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it was real.
Yeah.
And you know what's crazy about Hero 2? I love the fact, I think if you play any JRPG or just RPGs in general, buffing your party and your characters is a very big part of it. And competitive Hero, to me, that's the backbone of Hero. It's not necessarily the range he has from side B. Like, I know there are range things where it's a core to his gameplay, and he does, you know, like the second charge or second stage charge side B is like really good, has a lot of range, you can platform tech chase with it and stuff. But to me, the core of Hero is buffing himself up and changing the scenarios a bit more as they go on. And the cool thing is it feels a little bit like Shulk, but Shulk is a little bit more controlled, right? Where it's like, okay, I only can have one Monado art active at a time, and they have cooldowns, and it's the way I cycle through them. There's offensive ones, there's defensive ones, right? Some I can use for a mix of both. But then with Hero, it's like, well, if I just, it almost feels like Olimar in a way where he's scaling up. It's like, okay, well, if I just sit here and kill Pikmin and I don't do anything to Olimar, there's going to be two purples, three purples, right? I'm going to start dealing with him. Literally, this character is different when there's two to three purples than before. And the same thing goes with Hero. It's like, oh, okay, I'm fighting Hero. Oh, snap. Now he has Accelerado. Now he has an actual combo game. Now he can track me in the air. Now he can edge guard me even harder. Oh, snap. He has Psych Up. Like, got to watch for the Flame Slash. Got to watch for X, Y, and Z. So, and then on top of that, there's mixing them too, right? It's like, okay, he has every single buff, and then he has also bounce, which affects a lot of matchups as well. So kind of managing your own buffs, amazing, amazing character design. I've never even played a Dragon Quest, but I know the genre of JRPG in general. It is such, they really knocked it out of the park with that character. And I think it also translates over to competitive as well, which is not even something that they need to do, but it's sick that it also translated to competitive like that. So
the thing about his buffs in competitive too is it gives him a way to force people to have to approach him, right? It's kind of like the Steve thing, right? Or Olimar, like you said, if you give those characters space, sure, you can camp them theoretically, you know, like that's characters who don't have stuff like that. You can just camp, quote unquote, just camp them, you know, like that's the way to beat them. Like Kazuya, who hits like a fucking truck. It's like, he can't get stronger though. Like Kazuya just is Kazuya all the time. So you could just treat him that way. Hero, it's like, I could shut it down if I close the gap, but then that gets scary too, because then what if he just pulls out? He still has, like you said, Charles, a well-designed kit anyway. Like he still is a swordie at the core, which I thought was interesting too, because you guys are talking about Olimar and Hero a lot. And actually, Beast Mode Paul upsetting Cola put him in a collision course with Candle, who beat Hurt. So then they had to play each other, which to me is like, that sucks for Candle, because I feel like it's a much better grab to get Roy than it is Hero. Am I off there? I feel like Hero is just a really bad matchup for Olimar.
I agree.
I don't. Yeah. So I'm just like, it's so interesting coming off of, got to be one of the biggest upsets of the tournament period is Candle over Hurt. And in general, Hurt, who has been so consistent, you know, top eight Supernova, even better than top eight, right? At Supernova, so consistent in Japan, and then just running into, you know, I don't know, Candle's godlike. I think Candle's someone else who needs to be on more people's radars, to be honest with you, just more. And if this doesn't do it, it'll be a tournament where he strings together two or three of these wins in a row rather than just having one, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know what moment I think changed the tournament completely?
Ooh, the moment?
One specific moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, I blame him for my poor performance too. When Light F smashed on that platform.
Yep.
I think that ruined both of our weekends, bro.
That's good.
That was fated for neither of us to make top eight. I was in pools and I had a match and I'm like trying to watch both. I like keep trying to turn around and I saw that F smash and I literally yelled so loud that people turned around and looked at me. My heart broke, bro.
Like Oshimo is what you're talking about, right?
Light versus Oshimo. He's winning that game. He's at 50%. Oshimo's at over 100. He F smashes on the platform on accident. And he gets up air Shoryu'd.
See you.
When Ryu killed him for that mistake, I went through the whole roster in my head. Very few characters can kill you for that. I don't even think... Would Ganondorf's F smash kill him? Up smash kill him there?
Yes. Or not up smash, no. F smash, yes.
I don't think F smash...
You can't F smash, though, yeah.
Yeah, wait. I don't think you can F smash that, no. Actually, I mean, Vox's F smash is actually not...
Yeah, they just it was on small.
Small Battlefield, yeah.
Right, it was at 50! It wasn't even 53!
Yeah. He had another one where it started, I think, at 30, and it almost killed him. Like, when he's got Shoryu, I think he was at, like, 40 or something.
I don't think Fox would die to Ganondorf up smash. He might.
No, not at that percent. No.
Anyway, no slandering the Go Oshimo. That was a great play by him.
Honestly, you don't have a lot of time to react to that situation.
I don't think Ganondorf's up smash would even connect.
Nah.
No.
The characters I thought of, I think Hero's up smash would have connected, but it'd have to crit. If Wario has waft, you die.
Right.
I can't think of that many characters that just immediately kill you for that.
Steve.
Marth.
Steve probably wouldn't. Steve probably wouldn't.
I bet you.
I don't think Steve players would kill you for that every time. I think
not every time.
They have to execute really well to kill you there.
Yeah.
I don't even think Steve kills you for that.
Marth kills you there.
I don't know if Mario would kill you for that.
Someone has to play as Marth, so that doesn't count.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
When they see that mistake, like, I don't even think Mario would get the best possible situation. Every character gets a bunch of damage there, sure. Everyone punishes. But Ryu's, like, I think, the best character to kill you there.
Dude, and the way he landed on the platform instead of going, you know what I mean? Like, how he just did it. So, dude, his execution, I mean, I think... When Oshimo really landed in the scene, when most people knew about him, was Invitational, and a lot of it was from his tech chases, which were so godlike with focus, but also just his execution and his ability to just instantly know. Like, it's just great, man. Like, what great character knowledge. Well, and also, you're playing against Fox. You need to look for an opening like that. You need to fuck him up for that, because he dies at 50 sometimes if you're the right character in the right circumstance, and you need that to happen if you want to beat Light.
I can't even watch that again, bro.
Put that back on, Chris. Sad. Come on. No. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Paris. Luigi. That's my goat, though.
Man,
Luigi. Oh, Luigi crazy. Kills him. He jumps up and grabs him.
No, Sour Nair.
No.
Sour Nair.
I was going to say, then down throw up B? No.
No,
just Sour Nair up B, yeah.
You have to do Sour Nair short hop.
I guarantee you.
Luigi can do it.
Raru's killing him there.
Yeah, they find it.
That's what I'm saying.
But I think since the mistake happened, I think a lot of people hearing me say this would think a lot of characters would, but no,
it's not a lot.
You're not, you don't expect Light to just F smash on the platform on accident. If you're preemptively charging a smash attack before he makes the mistake, sure. But Ashimo's in the center of the stage, positioning himself well for Fox's platform stuff and like aerials and all that. And Light makes the mistake. Ashimo dashes forward, jumping up air, kill.
See ya.
Like Hiro and Wario have to hit the punish and have the condition for it to kill. Like have the walk or get the crit. Like Ryu just does it. Like W. I don't think Ganon kills you. I don't think Steve kills you. I don't even know if Mario kills a character like Fox with like a rising aerial while he's on the platform.
Like, you would probably have to get like a falling up air onto the platform from a full hop, and you might not have enough.
You're not going to get that.
Yeah.
You know who might get a kill is Ken. Maybe double jump down air proxy jab Shoryu against Fox. I think it might.
I don't know if like.
Well, that's obvious. It's Ken. It's right next to Ryu.
I know, but I don't even think Ken kills.
We need chat. Everyone lab out your characters. Let us know who kills Fox there. That's what we
but
need.
But I want the same frame advantage as Ashimo had.
Correct.
Yep, yes. So you had to have just done the backdash.
Yes. Like, people are going to misunderstand that part specific.
I'm sending Jazzo. He'll figure it out.
Essentially, a rising aerial or a grounded dash option is, like, kind of all you got.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, Small Battlefield has a lower platform, so you can connect.
Dude, he was at fifth.
Yeah, that's the life of Fox. That is it.
Does Corrin kill you there? All right, anyway, we're going to move.
Yeah, this is.
You know what's crazy? Light, I honestly didn't feel like Light was playing that well this weekend, but he still beat Mia, which was wild.
Mia.
Yeah, that was crazy to me.
Which is crazy because that's him destroying a bad matchup, but then Shattuck did it right back to him, which was insane. He 3-0'd him.
Everything about Light was
so weird.
Okay.
I don't get how he had that much trouble with, because Fox Corrin is like historically like hard for Corrin in both games.
Yeah, I think I watched that set and nothing to take away from Shattuck. I think Shattuck played that set well, but Light was playing like some dog shit. It was bad. that was bad. Straight up. There was moments where it's just like he dash up, grabbed instead of up smash, and that would happen because he's playing Smash 6, so maybe he accidentally hit shield or something like that, or I don't know if he has other button configurations like X grab or something like that, but that was super bad, and he didn't even throw. Like, he was so tilted that it just Shattuck got grab released. Like, didn't even forward throw. So you could tell that Light was not playing well just from the sheer execution. And then on top of that, you could see the frustration in the player cam too, especially after that one grab and he just like grab released. It was bad. So I think Light was able to lock in certain parts of the bracket, but I don't know, but the execution just didn't really seem like it was there. I didn't see the 100% hit rate or like the 90% hit rate on tech chases, especially when Light's on point. You see him do like the single jab OS and you just get blown up and you get up smashed no matter what option you pick. Stuff like that is so important with Fox just because of how fragile Fox is. If you're just a handful of mistakes or you not getting the up smash on a tech chase, even though it's not technically quote unquote true, if someone's on point, you get tech chased by a really, really good Fox, especially someone like Light, you're dead. Like, you're just going to lose the stock because they're going to cover every option on reaction. So it might as well at that point be a confirm. And that's so important for Fox is you wipe the rage. If you don't wipe rage as Fox and you're getting the back air at 160, 150,
broken.
You have to play so well. And that's broken.
Orin's nair air is so broken in comparison to Wolf. It's already broken on its own, but that shit is so much better than Wolf. It's absurd. All right. Sorry. I can't help but think about that every time because I played Wolf back in the day.
Yeah, we all know Wolf's the worst PC. We know.
If I have that,
dude.
But yeah,
Shuton is the GOAT. The original, come over from Japan, always perform. He's back.
He cooked,
bro.
Oh,
he cooked. That. Period, bro.
He
damn.
Also,
beating Sonic's twice
for Light Mia. I'm not surprised.
I'm not either.
At all. I know Light very well. And unfortunately, I don't want to boost his ego too much. But when he says he is going to beat someone,
yeah,
he always does. Because he doesn't just say, like, He always is super confident, thinks he's going to beat everyone, wants to win the tournament, blah, blah, blah. But when he talks to me in this specific way that he's going to beat someone and that he's figured something out, he always delivers. And he was so confident the entire weekend that he would beat Mia that I had zero doubt that he wasn't going. I don't care what matchup it is. I wasn't surprised. Like, but obviously it was strange that he was capable of doing that. And then he like just gets smoked in much easier matchups. But I like still like I'm not surprised because he even talked to me about what he learned specifically, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not surprised. Good shit to light. Like, that is a huge one. I know he's beaten Mia before, but I think this one's a little different. It's open bracket. It's B tier. Blah, blah, blah. Also, I think that shit should have been on the mainstream, regardless if it's winners, losers, or whatever. It was number 10 versus number 2.
Yes. Dude.
I know there's a schedule, quad stream, this and that, but I don't think that much would have, like, it's number 10 and number 2. Like, they played in a corner, and, like, no one really, like, we're not audibly, like, we're just a few people watching, like, at least in the venue. I don't know. Like, it's number 10 and number 2, bro.
No, Gavin, I totally agree. I think context is more important than
if
winner's quarters is two players that are on hot runs. Okay, great. But that doesn't mean that you neglect the loser's bracket that is something like that, right? Like, there's, you can make space. And that's where the quad does come in a lot really well. So at least it's somewhere for people to watch. And the quad was really good. Shout outs to the production team, because the quad was very good this weekend, because production could, or casters could change the main stream, what they were casting, and then there were three streams below, which is really cool. And then they have different layouts, which is awesome. And it's something actually I've been talking to Devin from House of 3K about, because I love casting quad, and so do you, Charles. I know that. Actually, I love casting quad specifically with you. I think we have that good combination. Dude, we're kind of goated.
I usually don't talk about my own commentary in that way, but I will say, me and Haz on quad, that shit is lit.
It's a great combination of like my ADHD and good character / game knowledge and your amazing character and game knowledge, where there's eight characters at once fighting each other and we can just kind of keep up and like do all that. I think we're very good at that. But anyway, I love quad, and I think it's important for exactly what you just said, Gavin. Like, one of these players is out of the tournament after this. We need to see what the fuck happens. Yeah. And it could be Light, and it could be Mia, who are two crowd favorites too. And I think too, like, Mia falling out this early, it really just seems to be less of a trend and more of a consistency, where Mia just has a hard time when he travels over here, right? I feel like he either sweeps from winners or some 17th, 25th type place. I don't know what's up with that, because it's not like it was a bracket thing, because he had to play Light and that's who he lost to. And Syrup, who, I mean, obviously Steve is a whatever matchup, but he plays against the best Steve on the planet all the time.
He didn't get matchup checked. It's not like he came through and was like, whoa, this U.S. insert
Zero Suit Samus times two, or two Sonics or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
He almost got checked by Jazzo. True.
Yeah, true. True. The Sonic. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not character infamiliarity. So it definitely raises the question, is Mia just not as comfortable? I mean, traveling from Japan, you know, it is quite the far journey. I don't know how early Mia's coming in to acclimate to the jet lag and stuff like that. Maybe something Mia has to do is just come a day or two earlier, but obviously that takes more resources and all that other jazz. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm very curious if it's just the atmosphere itself, or if it's just the travel itself, or something he's got to figure out, right? Because obviously he's amazing. He's insanely good at the game, but something might just be a little off. And the crazy thing is, at least the Light set, it was just a straight 3-0. Not even like not clutching out game five or something like that. That's why something's got to be a little off. Because even I completely respect Gavin's statement of just whenever Paris says, like, I'm going to beat someone, he's going to beat him. But for Mia to not even take a game, come on. Either the Game & Watch Light or the Game & Watch Fox matchup might not be as bad as we think. Maybe it's just more just Fox playing more neutral. I don't think that. I think
Meister plays it better. Like, a lot better.
Okay, that's fair.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think Meister, when he hits Fox hits a bit harder and
Meister really shields more.
Yeah. Meister makes him play the game a lot, like the guessing game a lot more.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Meister shields a lot.
Well, I also think Meister, what branches off of that, because I think for Meister, it feels like it's easier for Meister to get the kill, but there's also, since Meister's shielding a lot more, there's the mini game, and this is the main reason why I think this matchup is not that great. Can Fox grab Game & Watch, put him in disadvantage, hit a single up air, and like just up air the crap out of Game & Watch, and then maybe get an up smash out of shield, or get a sour dash attack back air, which Mia was doing a really good job of DIing, by the way. Didn't really get hit by that. You are a floaty. If you're a floaty and you're getting hit by sour dash attack at ledge in the back air, you need to reevaluate your DI. You just have to normal get up and not... You got to flick your stick back after you normal get up. Just come on now. It's not that complicated. But so what Meister does really well, since he is shielding more, he plays the spot dodge game. So it's like, oh, if Light goes for a grab on me, I'm willing to stay in shield and spot dodge. And then, oh, did you just grab my spot dodge? Let me up smash you or just completely destroy you, right? Especially if it's a dash grab, like that's the stock, or something like down smash, right? You get the barrier or something like that, or at least get that close up hit that sends at like a, such a nasty angle, and then Meister can just go for the edge guard. But yeah, I think Meister's more willing to play the RPS of, I'm going to shield a lot. You can't jump over me because I just up beyond reaction, and I am willing to do degenerate spot dodges to get really fat punishes, because realistically, Fox's only out in the matchup is grabbing or risking a dash attack. And you got to risk the dash attack right when you think Game & Watch is going to short hop Nair.
Yeah.
And you got to hit Game & Watch as he's coming up on that short hop to set the Nair up. Because if you dash attack too late and he's coming down, you could just get beaten out by the disjoint, right? So that's the main mini game that's going on with Fox Game & Watch. And I just think Game & Watch gets way more damage and kills for winning the mini game than Fox does. So I obviously it's not that simple. Game Watch can also, like, they both have other advantages, but that's the core of the neutral, and that's where I think that problem lies.
I like the way you phrase it a lot. Like, think of it like this. Fox's grab is really strong. It really is.
Frame 8, but it's quick. It puts you in a really bad
position. But is it as strong if it's like the main thing he's looking for? No. If his grab is just really complemented by his other strengths, and Game & Watch doesn't deal with Fox's other strengths. If we're talking about, like, if we're playing for more of Meister's perspective, like heavy shit. Mia is often forward airing a lot more spots where Meister.
You're cutting off.
Sorry. Meister might just be, he's usually shielding a lot in spots where Mia might be fairing or nairing, versus Fox specifically. So if Meister knows, like, he doesn't have to deal with Fox being above him or hitting his shield, the grab becomes that much weaker. Imagine a matchup where Cloud has to grab to get something started. Like, that would really suck for Cloud. So that's what I think. Like, if you think of it from, like, Spargo's perspective, if you were watching Spargo, imagine if he was fighting someone where the only way he can get anything started if he ran in and, like, grabbed. Like, that would suck really bad. So it kind of reminds me of that if we're talking Fox versus Game & Watch.
Yeah, and I remember my statement earlier saying that Meister punishes harder. It's probably the other direction. I think Mia on hit plays the advantage state better because it's a little bit more flowcharty in a sense where it's like, okay, because Mia is playing tilt stick, right? So just following Fox, mixing up air and nair, because if Fox reflexors, you can nair and all that jazz, and then goes for things like four tilt, two frames and edge guards. But I think Meister just plays the neutral better. And remember, also take this into account, if Fox dash attacks Game Watch's shield, you are getting up smash. Like, you will lose your stock or you'll take a bunch of damage. Like, up smash can just literally combo into up air and stuff like that. So when look at that set back with Light versus Mia, there's so many times where Light gets a dash attack on Mia. And I'll tell you right now, against Meister, those dash attacks are not flying. Those dash attacks are getting shielded. They're getting up smashed. And again, I think the way Meister plays the neutral is just a lot better because he's really taking advantage of the risk reward in neutral more so than getting the opening. I think Mia is really trying to get that opening and get that edge guard, or really get that opening and get that advantage state, right? But again, I actually think Fox is one of the better characters to get out of a juggle situation from Game & Watch. Obviously, Game & Watch is still amazing at juggling Fox, but you know, Fox has the reflector against up air. You're one of the hardest characters to juggle in that game because you're the fastest faller. You have one of the best like fastball neutral air dodges in the games to get through things like Nair or up air. So I think Mia has to play more of just like leveraging the neutral part of the matchup, because I think that's the tough part. Game Watch does have a very good advantage stage, especially when he gets Fox off stage with no double jump. Like he's cooked. That back air is going to destroy your Firefox. It's over. So yeah, I mean, it was interesting, but we'll see how those two players go at it in the future.
I always wonder if like the players, like super top players, like actually watch Tweak Talks. Or like listen, or like someone sends them clips like, bro, this is what they said about you. Cause like, we're not even, I think a lot of times people may be like, bro, like, why are they being so disrespectful, like mean or something about the way someone plays? It's like, no, it's just something we notice. Like it's something that they could work on. Like it's something that could help them grow. And I think we do a good job of breaking it down a lot of times. And I just wonder if like people see it. Like, I wonder if someone is going to translate it and then send it to Mia, and then Mia's like, oh, I should play the matchup this way. And then next time you see Mia play light, it's like completely different, you know? That would be interesting.
Sorry, Paris.
Well, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, I mean,
dude, Charles, you know what this reminds me of? We were having a conversation with other casters about in-house commentary or not, and how we kind of feel bad because it's like, man, he keeps getting neutral get up. Like, what's up with that? And there's kind of this back and forth where I'm like, I kind of hate it because that sucks. Like, it definitely feels like it could have an effect on the set. But on the other hand, and also as like a kind of regular sports watcher, that doesn't exist. I don't go to Yankee Stadium and hear the announcers go, man, this guy can't hit a curveball. You know, it's like, well, shit, I guess I'm going to throw a curveball now, you know? So Gavin, as a top level competitor and Marcus Stewart, I mean, we've all competed. What do you think about, I genuinely want to get your opinion, because I like it because you can work the crowd and get them into it, but I also think it's a different skill set because talking about the game and building a hype moment while people who are participating can hear you, I don't know. I feel some sort of way about it, honestly.
It's difficult.
Hate.
Yeah. It depends on the venue, genuinely.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm at Evo, which I have been.
Oh, snap. Turn it up.
It's technically like in-house commentary, but there is so much I can't even tell.
Yeah.
But if it's an invitational and we're in a much smaller space, it's the only thing I can. So it's possible. I don't think it's easy. And I will definitely be judgmental depending on what they say.
Yep,
that's what I was thinking too.
Misinformation,
that's on me though. Like, but I will hate it. I will.
Gav, that's what I've always told players when I get asked this question about in-house. I'm like, I'm just doing my job. Your job is to not listen to me. I'm sorry. Like, it is what it is. If it was up to me, I wouldn't be doing in-house. But that's like what the event wants or whatever. So let's do it. But then I feel bad because I also personally know you guys, like a bunch of you guys, and it's like, fuck, they're definitely listening. I'm so loud.
Like, I'll hear something that is just obviously like a terrible thing to say for like what's going on in game. Like, it's just obviously wrong. Like, I'm sorry. While I'm playing, I can't like get away from like hearing the thought.
Nope.
But like it depends on the scenario. And then there's like in between events, right? Like there's Evo, then there's Invitational, and then there's in between where it's like a big space. It feels like a grander scale. But I don't think it's easy to do. But they don't have to care that much about the players. I think if you want in-house commentary, you can do it.
Thank you. And fuck the players.
Yeah. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Like, that's one thing.
And I think Paz's perspective when he has to do in-house commentary is like, I wouldn't expect them to, like any caster, to think any other way. I think that's perfect. But like, if you say something trash, like I hear it. Like,
and you will be judged.
Like,
just
I will
put the headphones on, Jim. Just put the headphones on, all right?
I don't like headphones.
Put the earbuds on, put your volume at max, start jamming out, just play the game.
That's my bottom line counterpoint. Is it's your job to tune it out? Sorry, like that's
dude. Yeah,
like, yes, it is.
My bottom line. I've been doing this.
I've been doing this for so long. I deal with like the dumbest stuff every tournament. Like it's all the same to me. Like
I'm scared to ask. Have you ever heard me say something and it distracted you during a match?
I can't think of a like.
Yes. All right.
I think your casting is like genuinely good. I feel like
okay, we don't need
especially think of the, like Kaz. You weren't on the show originally, but I think we were all such a fan of you, and like not just for like the podcast, but like we've always liked your casting, bro.
Like, thank you. I'm an award winning caster, so I appreciate
exactly.
That.
Yeah,
of course.
Once but, per episode, it's gonna keep happening.
I don't for me, I can.
But if you try to get analytical and you genuinely just don't have that in your repertoire, it's going to upset me greatly. Like,
you gotta be careful giving these tips out. Someone might do it on purpose now at this point.
That's yeah. True. Like, oh, shit. Some people do not want to see me.
They're just gonna like start saying the wrong moves that you're doing. Like, I don't know why tweet keeps going.
That's not even that wouldn't upset me that much.
That wouldn't bother me.
Mm. Yeah, that wouldn't bother me because that's just so ridiculous. But
I see it.
If someone says like something that's just completely untrue, like you, like someone hits Gavin Shield and it's like a minus six move or a minus seven move, and they're like, or let's use seven, right? It's like a minus seven move, and they're like, well, Diddy Kong has no way of punishing that. It's like, but he does. Like, like don't say that.
Bro,
like
imagine like you're getting like you're dealing with like Samus or Game & Watch at the ledge, and they're just like, yeah, don't know. Don't know why they're not getting off the ledge here, like or just like some shit like that.
Dude, against Game Watch Bacon, man,
or Mewtwo at the ledge. Don't sleep. Hold up.
You like see
having
light
a really
recover.
Hard time here.
Yeah.
Like, why does like, he normal get up?
Like or you see like Light or Spargo consistently recovering with the characters with the bat recovery. Dude, they should be edgeguarding them so much more.
Does when that happen?
Do you think I'm not trying? Like, I don't
when
get
the
it. Like,
disagrees or says what they would have done, I'm immediately raging.
Nice.
Oh, dude, that's
this
the
is.
Best.
I don't know if they know, but this is so true. Sometimes I'll get home from a major, and Gavin is so mad about something he heard wrong in commentary that he sends it to me, and he's just like, "Bro," and I'm like, "So what, casters?" No one's safe. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, watch
not
out.
The only one.
Oh yeah, it happens all the time. There is, I will say that about casting is God, you are under such a fucking microscope all the time. Like bring it to a higher level. So like, and obviously Charles and I've been there a million fucking times, and I've said things wrong before, and it's not like on purpose or malicious or something, but it's how you. Number one thing to be a good caster is learn how to learn from your mistakes very quickly. Just stop doing them. Like that's all. That's my advice. Find people you trust. Find people who you think have good opinions about stuff, and don't live in an echo chamber that just says, "No, you're great. Don't worry about it. All those idiots are wrong." It's like, well, hold on a second. Usually, chat. I love chat. This doesn't mean they're right all the time, but if they're all saying something, I don't know. Maybe there's something there. That's all. Right. I got. And this
like
is not like
to 90%,
for a riptide. Yeah, this is like in general. Like this is in general. I'm not honing in on anyone specific here, but just in general, that is always my advice. I want to become a commentator. I'm like, learn how to listen and learn how to be critical about advice about or things that you read about yourself. Some of them, they're just going to be mean because they're fucking assholes. That happens. Okay, great. Sometimes if eight people say it in eight different ways, maybe you're doing something that's undesirable. So you got to learn how to do it. That was certainly
being able to filter feedback. I think
it's
is
so
like
key.
What you're saying. Yeah.
It's so key.
I think you're very good at that too.
I think so. I just take everything.
Well,
cause
I mean, you,
heart.
Well, like
I really
you
do.
Go, I don't know why I don't give a fuck, dude. Like I don't read Reddit. I don't read the comments, like whatever, bro. Like
I read
I'm
it for you,
Chuck. You know, it's crazy. You do though. That's why I shout you out because we've had blocks together, and then you would like come up and be like, "Hey man, like on Reddit or this, they said this, this, and this." And I was like, "Oh snap, that's really good feedback. Okay, like cool. And then maybe this, this, and this." You know what I'm saying? So I think you're very good at filtering feedback. I think I'm horrible at it. So I've tried to do it, and I'm like, "Yo, this shit is whack." And
you're
just,
always just like, "These guys are
like,
fucking
I just
idiots.
Give up.
I have no idea what they're talking. They've never done this before. They don't know." Like the whole Charles rant comes out.
Dude,
like,
I
yeah,
start,
but like
I start
that's
raging.
Who we're
yes.
doing it for. Like,
yes, I just
like,
immediately start raging.
Yeah, so I don't even know how we got on this topic, but yeah, dude, yeah, I'm sorry, we got
I will say for in-house commentary, I do change how I commentate if I know the crowd hears me. And like in a way where,
true, yeah,
right. Like I, instead of calling out habits and stuff like that, I will just say like what just happened. Like, so that information is available for the player. I am kind of pointing it out, but I try not to. It's not like, oh, I'm not going to say, oh, wow, he hit his, that's the third jump off ledge that he hit. Like, I'm not going to say that, obviously. I'm just going to say, oh, he hit his ledge jump with that. You can be like more objective, and you kind of craft your commentary to more being funny / entertainment and involving the crowd. And
I think involving
that,
the crowd,
to me, yeah, is right, like the main thing for in-house. So I think you can always change your commentary. And if you are more analytical and you like to break down the macro parts of the game, and that's something I love to do. But when I'm commentating in-house, I do not want to accidentally give information that will affect the set. So I will put that filter on.
Fuck the players.
Really? I mean,
because to me, those information is a way to make a story or a narrative. Shattuck keeps hitting forward air, back air at the ledge. If I'm saying that and the guy plugged in does not notice it and then adjusts accordingly, oops. If Shattuck is so consistent at the ledge here, you can see him hitting his forward airs into back airs all day. How is Tweet going to adjust?
He really likes that combo.
Hey, I'm just saying, Marcus, why are you upset?
It sounds like what Charles is suggesting is like, because it's in-house specifically, it's like more present and it's not anticipating the future or comparing going the present the moments to the past.
Oh, mm-hmm. I see
what he's saying. Like,
it's like meditation.
I bet you he rolls here or something or whatever, right? Shout out to Mars.
If I was casting in-house, I think my style would have a difficult time if I was caring about the players, because I'm flaming everything. Yeah. Like, I feel like when I cast it at Summit, I can't remember how I approached it too much, but I was definitely like more along the lines of like logically explaining why they were doing this and that because this player does this all the time. Like, so I sympathize. It seems very difficult. It's because you're not just casting in the same environment every time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then you're not playing on the same stage list every time, so you can...
Oh, I play a different game for a living every week. It's awesome, dude. Great.
One thing I will say, I think the perfect in-between is when they shut down the in-house for in-between the games,
yes,
and then the characters can go into the macro part being like, yeah, man, it felt like Tweak was doing a little bit of jump off the ledge, or it felt like Sonics was kind of overreaching with these back airs off stage and da 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 da, right? And you kind of critique some of the gameplay or go over the past game and talk more about all those macro aspects of the game, but you're not, the house can't hear you. And then the house commentary comes back on when the game is back into it. And I think Genesis has done this, if I'm not mistaken.
They did.
So that's the perfect balance, because you can still talk about the macro part of the game, but you just do it in between games and it's more sectioned off, if you will.
My argument was, ideally you'd have casters just like a baseball game or a football game. Like they have fucking Tom Brady calling games or Tony Romo, like ex pro players who can really break everything down, like you, Charles, on the screen at Nintendo. You know, they have casters who do that to the home audience, again, for the purpose of educating them and also telling them what they should expect from a storyline perspective. Here's how they're going to win. Here's how they're going to lose. You got to watch this player. You got to watch out for that, right? That doesn't blast out to the fucking stadium. So to me, that's two sets of casters that you need, or one caster in-house and two on whatever. But it's two different. They're so close that Smash just overlaps them, I feel like, because it's easier just to like, all right, yeah, they're already casting. Like, let's set them up, which is totally fine. But I think having my ideal situation would be one in-house person who is only there to be like, you know, introduce the players, talk about what character that, whatever, like get the crowd hype and work them. And then you have the casters doing their normal job. That's ideal to me. But I like the one you said too. I think it's a good compromise. We are way fucking off track. Congrats to Spargo for winning Riptide.
Well, it's funny because I was going to bring it back because Chuck said something about, oh, Sonic's going a little too far off stage with the back airs. And it just reminded me that Shuton was killing Sonic's off stage a lot, like reversaling him for trying to extend. And I was just like, bro, like, who can you think of, like, a player that is consistently reversaling Spargo? I mean, sorry, Sonic's off stage and and taking stock. Like, normally, you're fighting for your life out there. Trudeau's like, I'm jumping over and down air. Like, what? Like,
Walmart's down air is active, bro.
It's very active.
I think that's a big part of it. The purple down air, especially where he just needs it to connect. He doesn't care if it's the spike or not. That was a big.
I think we can all agree that Olimar's recovery is ass. Like, right? It's pretty bad.
It's closer to bad than good, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
okay.
For sure.
Like, Sonic
for
should sure. just edge guard him more, right?
Yeah, like, what yeah, is like, he doing, bro?
Come on. Like,
he doesn't. He can't do anything. He can't hit you once he presses up B. Like, and he has no Pikmin.
Y'all are caster haters. I love it. Anyway, what else we got? Dude, we're going to. Go ahead.
I guess it's just Spargo. Like the only. Like, I can't think of someone who's beaten Sonics twice in one of. Oh, Gavin. Gavin and Spargo. Yeah, like, think about how many people have beaten Sonics twice in one event.
Definitely a short list.
Short list is fuck, dude. He's so. Mark. I mean, you're talking about.
Spargo won 2 P tiers in a row.
That's crazy.
That is
the shit ain't nothing. The other one.
Yeah, he's OD.
That is
bro.
Not easy.
He's back, bro.
Especially with, I feel like just, I mean, obviously.
That's the best player in the world.
During the Leo era, we saw that quite a bit. But I think seeing it in this era is pretty crazy. Like, Akula has done it, obviously. But I feel like current, right now, Mia's got a really good shot at any, I mean, even more players than Mia. But Mia has beaten Akula at multiple P tiers, right? And it feels like there's not a crazy gap between one and, you know, the rest of top 5/top 10. So doing it now is very, very impressive.
Has he ever been ranked number one?
Nope.
No, right?
Nope. Nope.
Well, aside from the Wi-Fi Warrior rank, shout out, obviously.
The important one.
His Inkling's on that list. That's how, and Sephiroth. Raw.
What?
I know. Hey.
Dang.
Go. Gavin, did you want to talk about Riptide at all and your experience?
Yeah.
Close it out.
I'm trying to remember all my matches that were like earlier on. I had a good set with Snow.
Nice.
I was up 2-0. Apparently, Snow was like reverse 3-0-ing / getting close to reverse 3-0-ing a lot of players, I noticed, especially after our set. It's kind of how all of his sets went. That I saw. I saw a set with Luis that was a reverse 3-0.
That one was crazy. That
when he played Sonics after that, it was like he got momentum after being down. Like, and I was just saying, like, yo, Snow is just a fighter. Like, holy shit. Like, he's in these bad matchups or these bad scenarios, like set count wise, and he's just going. But yeah, that was actually the hardest I've ever been Mario'd by a Mario, if that makes sense.
He's very good at doing that.
Because usually it feels like I have like a magic spell to not get Mario'd. I definitely don't. Because I got Mario'd a few times and I almost lost. So yeah, that was pretty interesting. And then I played.
Real quick, if there's one thing you are very good at against Mario, and this is something I pointed out. You do not get hit by up smash at Code Percent. You just don't. I don't know how you avoid it.
In Smash 4, it was the only thing to worry about.
Yeah, but you played a giant sword.
Just don't be there. Just get away.
He's got caster brain now.
He's not that fast on the ground.
Don't enter his zone, all right? We get it.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Marcus. He
is so...
And then I had to play Syrup, and I felt like...
Dude...
That's why he's good at not getting hit.
Do you not know that meme was circulating, Gavin?
Oh, how yeah, to beat Mario,
dude!
I
holy shit!
The picture of Mario, I think, is what makes it so good.
Yes, yes, it's very funny.
I don't even know what render that is from. Like, it's not Smash. But I was telling Marcus, this is the first tournament I've studied for. I think. Because I don't want to say I'm like lazy or I don't prepare. I just don't do a lot of VOD review or like specific bracket preparation. I play the game a lot. I study my characters a lot. I study my potential characters I'm fighting a lot. But I'm not looking at everyone I'm playing against and studying their matches. I'm not doing that all the time. So I'm not doing a traditional like preparation for every tournament. This was the first time I did more of a traditional prep since Terra, I think. So I felt very prepared. I played zero people I was projected to play against. And I'm now going back to my previous methods because this is Smash Ultimate and you never play who you're supposed to play. I was very excited to play Mia. I was very worried about playing Icy Mist because Diddy Samus is very difficult. And then I was projected to play Snow, but that was like the only person I didn't study for because I had more of a priority on Steve and Samus than Mario. Okay? So, and then I'm watching Syrup versus Mia, and Syrup isn't breaking a sweat at all. And I play.
How much Game & Watch experience does Syrup have?
That's what I was wondering. I was
because, bro, he was chilling.
Ready.
He was chilling. And he, like, footstooled that anviled Mia at, like, zero, and he died off the top. And I was like, all right. I'm playing Syrup, who I've played quite a few times from my area, blah, blah, blah. Barely beat him last time, so I knew I had a really big disadvantage. Like, I know I won the last set, but did I really?
You know, it's like one of those sets, yeah, that you feel like that afterwards, yeah.
It was a coin flip. So I prepared a bit, and I'm pretty sure every game was last hit. And game two is where I was like, I'm done, because it was last hit, and he forward aired, and it hit the crafting table and extended it, and it's the only reason I got hit and died. And, like, it's not like he put the crafting table there. Like, the game just put the crafting table there when it spawned. Like,
I'm just positioning. He was counting. He was like, all right, crafting table's coming down now. Let me push it right here. Throw out the fire.
So I knew it was kind of GG. And the Sephiroth game was close, but I lost. And I was just really upset because, I don't know, it just felt like a lot of things were working against me. Like, not to get into big detail, but. And then I played Zomba, and I knew I'd been playing Wario the past few days. So I wanted to start it, and me and Zomba practiced quite a bit, and my Wario was doing all right, and my Diddy was doing all right, but it felt like my Wario was doing a little better, so I was just going to start Wario, and I probably should have went up 2-0. So it's just one of those events. Like, I remember I had a streak like this for a while, a year or two ago, where I just, like, a bunch of sets, like, for a few tournaments straight, just were barely not going my way. And the only thing that really kept me mentally in it was telling myself that, like one day I'll have a streak where it's, like, the opposite. You know what I mean?
The pendulum swings the other direction eventually.
Like, yeah, I'm just waiting for the pendulum to swing. Not that I'm just hoping. Like, I'm still going to practice and work hard and everything.
Right.
But I know that event, like, that's just how Smash is. Like, small differences will happen. I'll get some lucky moments myself eventually. I just got to keep working on it. I'll try to work on some game plans and stuff.
I mean, look at Spargo. He had a very rough season first half of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
And now he's just first.
I think it's hard not to get upset because the seasons are cut up so small now that it feels like pretty demoralizing to go from like a pretty good season to like a much worse start. But it's okay. And then earlier on in the bracket, like I said, I didn't play everyone I expected to. I played Anarchy for the first time, and that was instead of Icy Mist, I think. And Diddy Greninja is like really, really good for Diddy, in my opinion. Like, that's like opposite of the spectrum type stuff, like Samus to Greninja. Like, Diddy can like pretty much every typical Diddy game plan works against Greninja, whereas Samus, like, I was gonna have to play the most specific matchup. So, you know, that there's some fortunate type stuff going in my direction, but I mean, like, when you're far in bracket and it's game five and something goes your way or it doesn't, like, right now it seems like it's not in my favor, so I'm just gonna keep trying to work hard to get the pendulum to swing, like Charles said. But yeah, I'm proud of my region for sure. Syrup, Zomba, like, especially because they were my opponents, like Guy Pharaoh doing really well. Shouts to Spargo. Like, That's the GOAT right there, bro. It's inspiring for sure. He's just a fighter, had a bit of a rough time, just clocks back in, wins a couple P tiers. So yeah, I had a good event. It felt very Smash centric. I don't know, that might sound weird because they all are, but when you're in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, and it's like a big Smash tournament, like it's going to be very Smash centered for all of us. So we played a lot. We hung out a lot. Talked about the game a bunch, played a bunch, obviously, like in tournament. And I was really, really crushed after my loss, like for a bunch of reasons, but I'm already doing a lot better. Shouts to B. I feel like coming home was a lot easier just because, like, she got me a bunch of new stuff. Like, when I got home, like, my setup's all nice and clean. Like, it's like set up a little differently. I got a new mic and stuff. Like, I appreciate her. So I can kind of just focus on getting back into some. I have the Invitational coming up, which is great. I have another tournament this month that I can look forward to that I can try to bounce back at. But yeah, it was a great one. I don't know if y'all have anything else you want to say, but I feel like I said quite a bit.
It's a great note to end it on, Gav. Why don't you take us out, get us set up for some Patreon content?
Yeah, we're going to get into some Patreon content. Just our usual bonus stuff. But like I said earlier on, I do a lot of VOD review now on the Patreon if anyone is interested. Yeah, thank you so much for supporting the show, listening to the show, watching it, Patreon, YouTube, Spotify, all that good stuff, and have a good one.